Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Thomas Edison's revolution that began in the late 1800s was still going on in some communities in the United States as late as the 1930s. Here is an old government film about bringing electricity to rural America.
There they go, the electric lines from town. They'll go past our farm.
They'll be out there by fall, Biff. They're going out all over the country. Only one farm in four has electricity now, but every day the lines go farther.
It's an electrical revolution still going on today in places like Uganda. Here, a woman engineer tells the story of harnessing the waters of the Nile to bring power for the first time to a village.
So when water comes through the pipe, after it has hit the turbine, it will go down into the chamber and finally back into the river.
Electricity is the basis. It's really the platform for nearly every technology to transform daily life in the 20th century and beyond. And you can sense that they really understood that back in the 1930s when the last wires were being strung in the West.
Lights in the house mean a radio for Bip and better light for studying. But electricity won't do it all, Bip. We need small boys, too. Small boys who will grow up into men and put electricity to work. At work on the farm or in rural factories. Small boys, our stake in the future.
Small boys, like the wide-eyed kid in that movie about rural electrification, were not all that was needed. The investment that electrified the western United States was something that had wide support from federal, state, and local governments. It is a consensus that has not emerged to create a nationwide internet in the United States, even though places in Africa and especially East Asia are well ahead of the U.S. in creating Wi-Fi and internet access as easy as flipping a light switch. At least 19 million Americans still lack high-speed internet access, though the lights may be on, including the people of Silverton, Colorado. $100 million was granted to deliver internet service to this relatively remote community, but nothing so far. Jason Wells is Silverton's town administrator. Joining me now, Jason, welcome.
Hello.
Also with me to talk more generally about rural internet service as a mirror of the rural electrification program a generation ago is Brian DePue, Assistant Executive Director at the Center for Rural Affairs in Lyons, Nebraska. Brian, welcome.
Good to be with you, John.
So, Jason, how am I speaking to you?
Via Skype, as a matter of fact.
So there must be some internet there in Silverton.
There is, and we actually have, you can get a decent residential service. It's less the ability to provide adequate service than it is to fulfill our needs for the future and to provide larger scale bandwidth.
And what's the challenge there geographically and otherwise in Silverton?
Well, we sit in the southwest part of the state at about 9,300 feet. And needless to say, we get quite a bit of snow and we are nestled in by two rather high passes to the south and one to the north. And so we are pretty geographically isolated, and that's certainly part of the problem with getting here. But we're only about 50 miles north of the town of Durango, which is a decent-sized college town to our south, and about 65 miles south of Montrose, Colorado, which is also a decently-sized urban area.
Brian DePue, what do you think the civic responsibility is of governments and infrastructure to provide the means to get internet access? Is it the same as what rural electrification became in the 1930s?
Yeah, I think that's really right. If you look at what internet has become and will continue to become, how important it is, not just to your ability to, you know, start a business in a small community or access markets, but really to your ability to engage in civic affairs, to be able to read the newspaper and contact your elected officials. That's all moving online, and that makes internet a basic utility, just like water and electricity are.
Except we've kept this pretty much in the private sector, unlike what was the case with the railroads and then much more particularly with electric wiring in the West. It's not a common carrier kind of model where the government or there's some sort of very highly regulated insistence upon maximum availability of the service to everyone. This is a much more hit or miss process, Brian DePue.
You're right, and it is a political problem and a political challenge. We have to decide what it means to be an American and how important it is to provide these sort of access, this sort of access to everybody in the country, really regardless of where you choose to reside. And I would note that electricity at the outset was the same way. It was hit or miss, and it was not provided to everybody. And it took a significant political will and public investment to bring electricity to everybody. And we should look at doing the same thing with internet.
Jason Wells in Silverton. I don't want to get into some sort of welfare kinds of discussion, but on some level, do you think that someone else, some taxpayer, should pay for your internet access as basically a quality of being a part of the United States?
Well, our plight to receive enhanced connectivity or broadband connectivity, and really what we're talking about is a fiber optic connection, that plight for us dates back just about 13 years now. When market forces did fail us in the year 2000, US West, then Qwest Communications, which has since been bought up by CenturyLink, was awarded a $37 million contract by the state of Colorado. In order to build out to rural areas. Governor Owens at the time heralded this as a new statewide network that would help Colorado bridge the digital divide between rural and urban communities. We are one of 64 counties in the state of Colorado, and yet US West Qwest Communications failed to complete our build. And decided to throw up a couple microwave towers to get here. And I think the reality for them was in order to serve our community, there really just wasn't a market case for them to build here. And they managed to work their way out of the build to Silverton, San Juan County, because there wasn't a pot of gold at the end of our rainbow.
No market, therefore no service. Jason Wells, based on the quality of your Skype connection, you could use a little more bandwidth. I can hear it there. Brian DePue, who was the last community? What was the last community to be brought under the electric umbrella, and how politically difficult was it?
Yeah, rural electrification continued for some time, and I believe some areas in the Deep South were the last places to see electric lines strung there, and similarly telephone lines. It really just comes down to communities like Silverton. They ought to be given the tools to control their own destiny. And if you look at what we spent on rural electrification and adjust it for inflation, it's something north of $80 billion. And what we've spent so far on public investment in broadband doesn't really come anywhere close to that. We've only begun to make a dent in the broadband investment.
And the stimulus money that was supposedly put for infrastructure, definitely on the order of those kinds of numbers as well. So we can clearly afford it. Brian DePue, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Brian DePue is the Assistant Executive Director of the Center for Rural Affairs in Lyons, Nebraska. And Jason Wells is the town administrator in Silverton, Colorado, a town that still does not have access to full broadband internet. Good luck, Jason.
Thank you.
So this debate is still going on. Nick McLaughlin wrote us and said, "The internet is analogous to books. And we've made libraries free to the public. It makes sense that the internet as a method of communicating ideas should be free. And the more we depend on the internet for shopping, education, business, and communication, the more clear it will become that people need universal access to it. Is the internet a right?" Brian Glombowski says, "Don't be silly." Well, keep that debate going at takeaway.org. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. And you can tell us whatever you want on our Facebook page. You can find us at facebook.com/thetakeaway, Twitter @thetakeaway. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Catch up on that conversation or anything else on the show. Get our podcast, re-listen on demand. It's at our site, thetakeaway.org, courtesy of the internet. Thank you, Thomas Edison. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.